Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Today, the conversation is on the road. We are broadcasting live from Chinatown at the corner of North King and Mauna Kea Street at the historic Liberty Bank building. We hear about the fears and hopes for the future of this historic district. We go along on a walking tour as businesses worry that crime and homelessness will rise as a result of creating a downtown business district that excludes Chinatown. We hear from the Honolulu City Council member who represents the area. There's lots of change to come with more hotels planned and rail too. We hear about options to engage the community as we plan for change. We also look at the band scene, something often overlooked. Chinatown After Dark can rock, where cheap rent draws musicians looking for practice space and places to work. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today we bring you our Chinatown on the Road show. This week, the mayor signed a bill into law creating a new downtown business improvement district. Some say it's the first step of revitalization after the pandemic turned the area upside down with offices shrinking their footprint as employees work from home. Here's Mayor Rick Blangiardi.
This initiative reflects exactly what can happen when government and the private sector work in partnership. The goal is to revitalize the downtown area by improving safety, cleanliness, and overall appeal for businesses, residents, and visitors, as I said. This broader downtown area is the commercial and cultural heart of our city. It's a major employment hub and a gathering place for thousands of people each and every day. It must reflect pride, safety, and economic vitality. The BID model is a proven tool that works. It's an overwhelming success in Waikiki, and we will prove it again here. What we are doing today is taking a proven, real-world solution and tailoring it to our needs here in downtown so that progress is reliable, steady, and accountable. Now, this is not intended to replace city services. We are committed to those as well. It is designed to provide reliable, accountable layers of enhancement that create a stronger sense of place and support long-term resiliency. So to everyone who contributed their input, testified, supported, or challenged this bill constructively along the way, thank you. This is how good legislation gets made. So I'm proud to sign Bill 51 today, and we're even more excited to see this work move into implementation in the days and months ahead.
So the Chinatown area is not included in that district. Shulan Schubert Kwok was not successful in efforts to get a time commitment for the neighborhood to be included in the district to help tackle the problems of crime and homelessness. We took a walking tour on a recent Saturday morning to see what merchants and residents are up against.
This is the glass market, also known as the Chun Market. This used to be meat and frozen goods and fish. And Troy said definitely a fish market, very, very prominent. And down there was like noodles and soybean milk, like that for breakfast, no more.
How long has this been vacant?
Over a year.
I drive around Chinatown and I see a lot of these stores closing. They're having, you know, 2-for-1 sales, yeah. Moving sales. Yeah, what's going on?
Because I think they're worried about homeless and people don't come. Customers don't come. Because who wants to encounter somebody in your face asking for money and look threatening? And so I don't blame them for not coming. Our job is to clean up our Chinatown, present as clean an image as we can, work hard at this, and then ensure the safety. And in order to ensure the safety, we need to get rid of our drug dealers because the drug dealing brings the addicts here. And when they stay here, it's convenient for them to camp here to get their drugs. Right. So we have drug dealers preying on this people who are either addicts or mentally challenged, and they can't move too much. Some of them are in wheelchairs, but they're addicts. And so how do they make their habit continue besides getting Social Security or welfare? So they sell their EBD passwords, number one. Number two, they become what you call mules, for the drug dealers. Because drug dealers are not going to stay in the hot sun all day long. They come in with clean shoes, nice hat, a nice shirt, expensive shirt, and they have a backpack. Why would this person stay in Chinatown?
They have business here.
Yeah, they have business with this guy. So I tell you as a drug dealer, I say, hey, uncle, I'll give you 10 packs. They're $20 a pack. You sell, you get 2 packs free.
They're doing
willing,
the work.
Willing and willing and willing. So this is why I have so many. And people come down from downtown because of the crack security. And there are 3 teams. We don't even have 3 people, right, to volunteer. So even our police are hard-pressed to come out all the time. They try their best. I'm not saying they're not. They try very, their best. And so we have court trying to, but they've been stretched. They need to concentrate in Chinatown. So I'm asking for a police dog to help the police do their job to for probable cause. Because a lot of times you can just go up to a person and say, I want to see your bag. I want to see what's inside or what's on you. Right. If the dog smells it, you have probable cause. If we have police dog at the airport, at significant facility, we should be able to do one to fight drugs here.
That's part of the challenge, yes, in dealing with,
yeah,
Chinatown.
Yeah. So daily upkeep of merchant behavior and conduct, making sure it's sanitary, making sure they stay within the display line, and making sure they don't process rotten food on the on our park. Yes. Those are important. And then to protect them from other illegal vendors, because they're paying rent. The rent is high.
You know, in the morning that we were there, on one side of the street was a Mark van selling produce from a local farm. Down the way from the Oahu market, several people with carts in tow selling produce from their gardens. And they play a cat and mouse game with Kwok, where she calls them out for blocking the sidewalk with their carts. And on Kekuliki market, some vendors push their borders beyond the legal lines, all part of the hustle and bustle of a Saturday market. Kwok represents one of the many businesses and cultural groups that make up the patchwork of our Chinatown. She's a bit disappointed about the Downtown Improvement District, but is hopeful that Chinatown won't be neglected. She's pushing for more volunteer citizens patrols. It's a challenge trying to be practical, but not to alienate the community that needs to pull together.
We are part of Downtown Chinatown District 6. We are one unit, one community. So by splitting us up, it's like splitting up a Siamese twins and only solving half the problem. The other half is left. So when downtown get cleaned up by the higher power security and bigger budget to spend for cleaning and all of that, they're pushing all the unwanted over to outside. And we're not ready. And so already we see so many new faces coming from downtown. And we are hurting badly. So we're trying to survive our COVID and also our blackouts. And then you saw so many empty spaces. And so we see an increase in homelessness, drug use. Recently, more drug problems and then alcoholic problems. So people are yelling and screaming. And I think the drugs or not taking medication,
it's, yeah, causing problems. Yeah. And you know, we were just by a restaurant who just had its
windows broken. Yep. By a big rock, and during a popular time, 9 a.m. for dim sum on Sunday, so people could have been hurt. A week ago, I had 3 windows broken at the Vietnamese fur shop at 76 North. And then again on Smith Street, there's another window broken by the new pastry shop.
So the merchants need help.
Yeah. If you sign a lease that doesn't include the windows as part of the landlords, you're out of money. Just a Coulon on River and Hotel, they had their windows broken 3 times. They're leaving this place because they can't afford keep fixing. You know, how much money you make on a bowl of pho, right? Or a bunch of vegetables. Can't afford that.
And so it's tough. I mean, you've got issues with graffiti. You've got rules about illegal vendors, or you have rules that are meant to help protect the storefronts.
Enforcement is an issue.
But yeah, enforcement is an issue with illegal vendors coming in.
Yes, enforcement. And the police help us as best they can, but they're shorthanded. And then your new people are not familiar with the rules and the laws. So a lot of times they think they're doing something, but they're not doing the things we want them to do, which is to read the ordinances to able to enforce properly. So a lot of new guys don't know about the Chinatown, Kekuliki, mall ordinance or the no vendor laws about Chinatown.
Yeah. And so you're in a tough spot right now.
We are a bunch of volunteers putting our heart and soul into trying to keep Chinatown alive for all of us, because Chinatown belongs to all of us ever since the 18th century. So when Captain Cook came to Hawaii, he brought along some Chinese who worked for him. And then some stayed, some went on, but we happened to be the oldest Chinatown. And we became a territory. We got annexed, so we were part of the United States for a long time. San Francisco is the second oldest, then New York.
And there's a lot of effort to try and beautify the area, clean it up, curb appeal.
Yes.
Well, you know, everything, lots of renewed interest in paying attention.
This mayor is amazing. I think starting from a long time ago, Fassi was interested in Chinatown and continued with Jeremy Harris. And after that, there was no interest in Chinatown. The powerful, the rich people, they're not interested. So we fell into bad times after Harris. And then this mayor is very committed to Chinatown, and he has spent a lot of time and effort and invested in Chinatown with his team. So I can't say anything more than that this is the best mayor we ever had.
Yeah. And so what's your hope then with this business improvement district? What kind of help do you need?
To continue the leadership and vision of the mayor, provide more housing, get rid of the drugs. That's number one. Bring in resources to help us get rid of the drugs. And then once this Chinatown is not open to drugs, everything's going to fall in suit. The homeless will leave. People will leave to where they can get the best stuff. And then the gambling would also stop.
And you have organized a loose group of volunteers to help with your security.
Yes. We call ourselves, we are under the auspices of HPD in our district. They're training us, and then we report to them. So we share everything with them. So we are there. They're on the street, eyes and ears. So we have authority, written authority from the property owners and also the business owners to help them keep their sidewalks clean, their fronts, so they can open their doors. We can ask on their behalf, please leave this area because you're blocking their doorway. You're also blocking because of the city's ordinance of sit and lie and no storage. So we are helping the police with that. If we get into a problem, we call the police. So this is as an auxiliary to the police to help our town. Because a lot of times you call the police, they cannot come. Yeah, you're going to wait half an hour to 1 hour sometimes. And then business owners cannot do that.
Are you hoping then that you get more volunteers to help walk with you?
Yes, they need to be trained and under the Chinatown security team. So we need people who are willing and committed to keeping our sidewalk. Because we go at all hours. Because things happen at any time. You've got to be committed. It's just not a photo op opportunity to wear a shirt and then disappear. So we are very committed, as you know we are. And then Chinatown Survivor is a survivor of Honolulu. Many people, because they can bring their grandkids here and say, oh, grandpa used to come here or eat here, and so that's their heritage. So we owe it to everybody, it's their heritage, to protect and preserve Chinatown.
And you have an event coming up to say thank you, mahalo to the people who have stepped up to help Chinatown.
Terrific. I mean, Chinatown cannot be as clean as it is now without the committed dedication of our Department of Facility and Maintenance. My Chinatown clean team is the best. I've worked with them 10 years at least. So this year, we're honoring them. So five of my Chinatown team got to bring their wives or girlfriends to a banquet for them, honoring them, and also honoring Sanford Carr for redeveloping Mauna Kea Tower that housed 700 people without displacing anyone. And that's a 5-year waiting list on this one.
All right, but you want to give credit where credit's due.
Yes, and my very good commander, Paul Okamoto, and then also our DTS director, we are helping with the Chinatown Silent Station to design that correctly, so that we can serve more people. Both rail riders and non-rail riders who need to use the bathroom should be open to them. We wanted to have a ramp so that handicapped people can get up to the platform when the electricity is out or the elevator is broken, you know.
So you're helping to make sure that the voices of Chinatown are heard by whether it's Roger Morton at DTS or the facilities crew that comes through here.
Honor businessmen that went through the rough with us through COVID and survived and still holding shops here, not looking at big profits, but looking at just keeping the doors open. So we honor one businessman a year for doing that. So we hope that our needs are everybody's needs. And our business is a business that serves everybody. So it is our community, and we're not separated just because you in Kalihi or you in Waipahu, you're downtown. We all walk through the same streets, so we need to support each other.
Well, thank you so much for guiding me through Chinatown today.
Anytime, come down. We have the best coffee shops, the best dim sum, the best produce. You can't beat it, really. Just come down. We just want you to come down and see for yourself.
That was Shulan Schubert Kwok of the Chinatown Business and Community Association, who we took a tour of Chinatown with recently.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA. For over 87 years, providing health plans to the people of Hawaii with a commitment to supporting the health and well-being of the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
Hawaii Public Radio's Live from the Atherton Event Series presents author Pua Aquino this Saturday at 10 a.m. Pua will read from her book, My Kalo Has Lau, as well as lead activities where keiki get to exercise their green thumb with plants. RSVP for this free event at hprtickets.org, sponsored by HMSA.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art. With works from around the globe spanning 5,000 years, offering fresh discoveries and new perspectives. HonoluluMuseum.org.
DeSantos Tam is a council member for the downtown Chinatown district. He joins us live this morning to talk about screwing up with concerns about pushing the negative elements further into Chinatown as a result of creating the downtown business district. Good morning, Tyler. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah, glad that you're here for part two.
Yes.
Well, what can you tell us? I mean, how do you respond to the concerns that the residents and the businesses have?
Well, first and foremost, I want to pick up where Chulan left off, which is I want people to come down here and experience the markets and buy the fresh produce that literally comes from farms out in Kunia and Kahuku and all around the island and gets sold here. You can't get any fresher than that. As everyone knows, I mean, Chinatown does have its challenges, though, homeless and drugs. And as Chulan points out, you know, vandalism and other things. It really is a two-step forward, one-step back thing. Hopefully we can get it to three or four steps forward and one step back. As she also points out, downtown and Chinatown are, in a lot of ways, Siamese twins, but they're not identical twins. And so we set up the Downtown Business Improvement District to help provide supplemental services like power washing and cleanliness and safety and security. But Chinatown has a lot of other issues that we need to deal with first. And so instituting the bid along with downtown wouldn't necessarily address all of those problems. There's a lot of other things that we need to do first. The city, for example, owns 40% of the properties here in Chinatown. But the city doesn't have a process in place to effectively lease out the ground floor spaces that we have. And so we have to do that first. We just transitioned from one homeless service provider, now it's IHS, to a different one, now it's IHS. And as I was walking here, I saw some IHS crews walking around addressing the homeless. We have to beef that up too. Simply instituting a bid and saying, well, now it's your problem, Business Improvement District, go work on it. That isn't a good solution for me at this time. So we have to work on these things. But I am committed to picking up the conversation about a Chinatown Business Improvement District soon, now that we have this downtown one in place. I think one other observation, as Chulan mentions, and she's been a great leader in this, we have a number of nonprofits that are doing great work here in Chinatown, whether it's the artists community, whether it's the Chinese community, whether it's some of the historical societies. All these nonprofits are doing work. And I wouldn't want a Chinatown bid to just muscle its way in and say, well, there's new sheriff in town, now we're doing it, everything, and displace the voices and history and interests of these nonprofits that are doing the work on the ground. But we're going to get there. And really, it's going to take an all-of-the-above approach to solving these issues. I think we have made some great strides in cleaning things up and getting things moving, but there's still clearly more work to do.
So you're thinking there would be a second business development district as opposed to just bringing Chinatown into the fold?
Yes, and part of it also is if you think about a business improvement district, which for your listeners who maybe aren't familiar, we have one in Waikiki. It pays for, you know, the ambassadors down in Waikiki to help the tourists and some of the power washing and safety and security. It's like a homeowners association. The property owners pay into this fund. They elect a board, and that fund pays for all the things that the board chooses to. If downtown and Chinatown were part of the same business improvement district, by virtue of these larger downtown properties that are much more valuable, a huge office tower, for example, is way more valuable than the little generationally owned, you know, shop on the corner here in Chinatown. The downtown vote in the downtown business improvement district would always outvote, you know, the Chinatown folks. And I want Chinatown to have a voice. And so simply sticking them together under the same umbrella wouldn't necessarily allow Chinatown to have the flexibility that it needs to do its own thing, which is why I think Chinatown should have its own separate business improvement district. They can work together, but I want Chinatown to have that voice in that process.
Is there something else that maybe isn't apparent that's driving the downtown improvement district? I mean, I know, you know, we've seen, you know, the first of the downtown conversions happen. I mean, that's something new. We've got to rewrite our codes. But yeah. Is there something else that's driving that there?
And then if you look at the property ownership structure, again, we have much larger properties. If you think about the First Hawaiian Bank Tower, it takes up a whole block of downtown streets. Whereas here in Chinatown, some of these shops have been owned by the same families for generations. They're, you know, 3,000 square feet of parcel. They're very small. And I think the property ownership and property ownership structure is different. We're also seeing all across the continent, as well as here, this sort of movement to revitalize downtowns, to bring more residents in and do that. And so I think the stars aligned for downtown, where we have the business owners realizing we need to step up and do a little bit more. We have the property ownership structure with these big office towers ready to chip in and do this themselves. And we're not quite there in Chinatown, but we will be. We just need to do all the other things that I mentioned first.
Well, you know, when you compare it to the Waikiki Downtown Improvement District, you know, that was the resort district and we saw the hotels, but we've seen the advent of new hotels popping up, you know, the Marriott AC, and there were other plans for hotels in this downtown area.
Yes, and that's part of having a lively community 24 hours of the day. You know, in downtown, after 4:30 p.m., things are pretty quiet and pretty dead. And so slowly but surely, we're starting to get, as you mentioned, the AC Hotel. You know, those lights are on basically 24 hours. A lot of the restaurants are starting to stay open a little bit later and bring a little bit more life and make a 24-hour community. Same thing with Chinatown, though. I mean, early in the morning, we have the aunties with their little carts that they pull behind them doing their shopping. People come down for dim sum or have a bowl of pho for lunch. But it also kind of gets quiet in the evening. And that's another issue that we have to solve. If you look at Chinatowns all across the continent, New York, Vancouver, San Francisco, there's activity in the evening, night markets and other things. So we need to create, you know, structures and empower, you know, these restaurants to feel confident to stay open a little bit later. It is a little bit of a chicken and the egg, though. Do you stay open if there aren't customers? And if there aren't customers, are you going to stay open? So we need to break that, you know, mold a little bit. And it's going to take a little bit of courage, not just from the city, to continue its work to clean things up, but from some entrepreneur to take that risk and say, okay, well, we're going to bring something really cool here that's going to bring people down.
Yeah, so how do you revitalize this area, keep the integrity of the cultural and historic aspect of the town, but yet bring new investment?
Yes, and I think one missing piece, too, is, if you remember 10, 15 years ago, there was First Friday that was very art-centric. And the artists are still here. Don't get me wrong. They're still here, and they play a big role. And part of it is also reaching into that community and saying, hey, artists, like, what do you want Chinatown and downtown to look like? How can we promote your art, very creative things that you're doing down here? And sometimes, you know, there's a little bit of tension, I think, between the merchants that are down here and the artist community, the bars and the restaurants and all of that. And how do we get everybody onto the same page to have a 24-hour community? The fruit and vegetable vendors, you know, in the morning who are doing great business, you know, at lunch, some great restaurants, and at dinner time as well. And then in the evening, maybe that's when the sort of the art scene and the bars come alive, and really continue to bring people down here at all hours.
So what's the plan then? How long do you see a second Chinatown Improvement District popping up?
Yeah, so we just had the Downtown Business Improvement District signed on Monday. It goes into effect July 1st, but between now and July 1st, they need to ramp up and get ready to hit the ground running. And I hope that they can actually do some of the stuff before then. We're going to pick up the conversation about a Chinatown Business Improvement District, but that means reaching out to every single one of the property owners down here and educating them. And that may mean meeting them where they're at and having flyers in their language and having, you know, meetings with some interpreters, just so everybody really understands what's at stake. So we're going to do that. But also on top of that, we've been meeting with the arts community. We've had a town hall several weeks ago at the State Art Museum. We're going to have another one in December or January timeframe. We're doing a tour of some of the leasable spaces with the artists because they're looking for studio spaces. We want them to come down here. And if the artists are working into the evening, you know, they have a day job, but they're doing their art in the evening, they're here on the street, eyes out on the street, being part of the community. You know, there's all these moving pieces that we have to bring together, but we will. And it's, as I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, it's two steps forward and one step back sometimes. Hopefully it's three or four steps forward instead. But we're going to get there. It just takes a lot of time and effort.
So the idea is create some of the buzz and the synergy and get things going to get the interest back up again.
Yes. And again, one missing piece, too, is on the city side, we own 40% of the ground space here in Chinatown. And so along River Street, the city owns a lot of those, that ground floor retail that's empty. How do we have a process where the city can lease it out to the private sector in a fair way, but also a quick way? The city is sometimes slow as molasses. And how do we get that done a little bit quicker so we can get some, maybe a corner store, bodega, a little art studio, some nonprofits there?
Get some excitement going.
Exactly. But
thank you so much, Tyler, for coming down and spending time with us.
You're very welcome.
We have been hearing from Honolulu City Councilman Tyler Dos Santos Tam, who represents the Downtown Financial District, as well as Downtown Chinatown. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more from our Chinatown live broadcast.
There's something in your veins, something in my soul, something in your eyes of fire that ignites my bones.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
The news and music you hear on HPR are supported by nearly 200 local organizations, reaching you with their message and making a difference every day. Mahalo to University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program. They believe, just as you do, in the power of public radio. See a full list of our underwriters at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for HPR comes from the State Foundation on Culture and the Arts. Submissions for the 2026 Scholastic Art Awards competition are accepted through December 12th. More at sfca.hawaii.gov.
We are broadcasting live from the historic Liberty Bank, home to SHADE, which is a firm that focuses on public interest design in underserved communities. It played host last week to an event held for the first time in Hawaii. It was billed as the Mass Timber Blitz. It brought together more than 100 people to talk about innovation in building with wood, specifically large engineered wood panels. Take a listen to Woodworks' Janelle Leaf talking about what mass timber is and isn't.
Mass timber is not dimensional lumber, is not light wood frame. It is also not exactly heavy timber. So we're not cutting down giant trees out of the forest anymore to make one column. We're cutting out smaller dimensional materials, and those are getting engineered together to become mass timbers. But this is like plywood on steroids, right? This is massive pieces of wood. This is not 4x8 sheets of things. This is 4 feet by 60 feet. This is 8 feet wide to 12 feet wide is the widest you can go. And then, yeah, up to 60 feet in length. So we're talking about massive panels.
And that was an event, one of many that SHADE has played host to. We got a chance to sit down to talk to SHADE's Dean Sakamoto, the former Yale professor and architect, founded SHADE Institute, which calls the mid-century modern Chinatown building home.
First of all, SHADE is a public interest design organization. It's a 501c3 Hawaii state nonprofit. And our mission is to basically make a more sustainable and humane built environment. And a lot of it has to do with improving our community, our open spaces, and also helping along others who otherwise don't have the capability or the power to improve their built environments. And ironically, Chinatown, which is pretty much ground zero of our civilization here on Oahu, has been underserved. Despite being a historical district, Chinatown is a National Register of Historic Places as a district. And it's where the pre-contact civilization, Native Hawaiians on this side of the island on Oahu, began at the mouth of the Nuuanu Stream, convergence of the Nuuanu Stream, and the estuary, which is now Honolulu Harbor, began. And also our Western city, our Western civilization, post-contact began in this area along the harbor. And Chinatown has always been given the name Chinatown because on a map from the 1850s, on the earliest maps of Honolulu, the waterfront, showed Chinese restaurant. And I think that was the beginning of this kind of moniker, Chinatown. And because the Chinese were the first Asian immigrants who came to the islands, they escaped the plantations and started businesses here. So that's always been the name, but it's more than just a Chinatown. As you know, it was a settlement of Japanese immigrants, Native Hawaiians first and foremost. It was an area reserved for royalty around the Nuuanu Stream. Also, it is where Kamehameha I landed for his great battle at the Nuuanu Pali when he unified the islands here. He landed somewhere near the Nuuanu Stream and what is now called Chinatown, the downtown waterfront. So it's a significant area, but it's been underserved, maybe because it is a historical neighborhood, ironically, because people feel like they can't deal with the restrictions. There are a lot of rules to comply with for redevelopment, and there's a height limit. And also the city made it a special district in the 1980s, which means that it needs to retain a certain character. And the character that the current Chinatown rules, city rules, established was to make everything look like 1904, early 1900s after the second or third fire in Chinatown, which is also problematic because Chinatown had a resurgence in the post-war years. And we're sitting in one of the buildings that exemplifies that. We're sitting in the former Liberty Bank building that was built in 1952, designed by Vladimir Osipov. And it remains today on the corner of North King and Mauna Kea Street. And we're sitting here today. And it's also the home of SHADE Institute.
And you're envisioning being able to facilitate conversations here about the future of Chinatown, because we've got rail coming in, and that's going to change this part of town. I know there's the transit-oriented development plans that are in place. And so what do you envision for watching this place take shape?
There's a great opportunity with the train station stopping just a block from where we're sitting, because it'll be another means of transportation to and from our eastern urban core. Last stop is in Kaka'ako, to the airport and beyond to the west side, to East Kapolei. So it will bring people, and it's just another way to get people through here, and hopefully they'll stop here. But what needs to be done is, in this time frame we have between now and 2031, when the Chinatown and downtown and Ivale stations should be ready for use, is to make the necessary improvements and to provide the economic development and physical development to enhance these districts. And it just makes plain sense that Chinatown, as a cultural historical district, become another destination for not just locals, but tourists also who will be passing by here to the airport, to and from. So it could be first stop and last stop for our visitors. And also, as it remains today, Chinatown is vital on weekends because that's when a lot of the locals come in to shop. But there's so much history, there's so much meaning, and it's, I think just the proximity to the future rail station and the fact that it's our point of origin really should be celebrated. It should be invested in. Last time I checked, we get zero tourist dollars here. Of last year's $81 million to the Hawaii Tourism Authority, zero comes to this district. And it won't happen tomorrow, but we do need to get ready. And so what Shade Institute is proposing to do is to provide our expertise in planning and design, and also with urban rejuvenation. It's called urban rejuvenation, which is a combination of physical and economic development, focusing on Chinatown, but not just Chinatown, but there are no hard borders. We're next to Ivale, which will have its own station less than a half a mile away from us, and also the downtown station, which is also more like a quarter mile away from us or less. There are no real hard borders, but if we do it from the center of our PICO, where we began here, I think we have a chance to make things better. And now with the new downtown bid, I think that's great. The Business Improvement District in downtown will help to transform that area, which is adjacent to Chinatown. And there is an overlap on Bethel and Nuuanu Street, and I think that's great synergy. But if we plug away from the middle and we celebrate the significance and the vitality, past and present, of our urban core, I think we'll be a much better city.
Yeah, so you're proposing to be able to use Shade in this area as a gathering place where people can come and talk about plans for the vision for Chinatown ahead.
What we have here in this building is called King Liberty Center, former Liberty Bank building. We have a 4,000 square foot former banking hall that's beautiful, designed by Vladimir Osipov. It was built as a bank, but Shade has repurposed it as its event space, gathering space. And we're situated in the center of Chinatown at a very prominent corner, King and Mauna Kea Street. And it's a great event space, a great place to bring people together. So what we're proposing with the city is to help to realize the city's downtown and Chinatown transit-oriented district plans, the TOD plans for this area, because a plan is just a plan, but what we can do with boots on the ground here through our program, which is basically a fellowship training program for young and future planning and design professionals to get hands-on and work here in Chinatown, in the downtown core, and to do easy, low-hanging fruit, and also visionary planning and design, and also enabling our property owners, cutting through the chase, and hopefully having some authority to pre-screen project ideas and also help developers enable them with what we've learned over the years being here to grease the wheels for improvements, working in concert with the city departments, which include the design of planning and permitting, with DTS, with DFM, with the police department, fire department, all of the above. And with my experience and time here and relationships within those departments through my work as an architect, I think we can make it happen.
That was Dean Sakamoto of the Shade Institute, which offers public interest design services for underserved communities, and who was hosting us at its offices this morning. Sakamoto just returned this month from a trip to Singapore and Kuala Lumpur, where he visited the Chinatowns there. He says he was struck by what he called a rejuvenated Chinatown and what could happen with new development while enhancing heritage sites.
The stars above the ocean. God might take it for...
Support for HPR comes from Hawaii State Federal Credit Union, featuring home equity lines of credit. More about HELOC at hawaiistatefcu.com, federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Libraries lend books, of course, and sometimes they check out tools and equipment. In Copenhagen, you can borrow a person for a conversation.
I am a literal open book. I will answer any and all questions, and I'm not going to get offended.
The human library, helping people really learn about each other. It's on the world.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor The Hidden Nene.
You know, we started the hour with the hustle and bustle of the open market on Keikaliki Mall on a Saturday morning. We end with the beat of the late night music scene. Chinatown After Dark draws a different crowd. HPR's Maddie Bender followed a handful of local music groups that practice and play in Chinatown.
In Chinatown, an unofficial changing of the guard takes place each night around sundown. Shops close up and the day crowd heads home. The restaurants begin dinner service. Bouncers take up their roosts outside bars and nightclubs. The whole soundscape of the neighborhood changes. At the old Blaisdell Hotel, where Chinatown meets downtown, there's a night and day difference in the building's occupants. On a recent evening, Corey Quinones and Kevin Allen are headed to band practice. Corey's in a band called Jackie Chan the Band. Kevin's in one called Skullboy.
Howdy, boys. Skullboy tonight?
Skullboy tonight, baby.
Where are you guys in, the Blue Room?
We're in the Spag Shack. The Spaghetti Shack.
Yeah.
Shorthand.
Tyler Yogi holds the lease for a practice studio in the old hotel that a bunch of the local bands use. But he says cheap rent draws an assortment of lessees to the space.
A bunch of like small businesses and stuff. Like, so of course you have like the music studios. You have like, there's like lawyers up there. There's like tailors up there. There's like all kinds of like little
studio.
Yeah, there's like a burlesque studio or something. Like, I've had this studio for a little over a year. And then I had another studio that was on the third floor that I had for like 2 years or so before that. And then even before that, there was on the fourth floor, there was, when I was like 19 or whatever, we had a studio there for about a year or two. So past like 6-7 years, something like that, yeah.
Have you seen the space change at all in like all the years that you've been playing there?
No, I haven't seen, yeah. It's all been pretty much the same, yeah.
Do you ever get complaints from like the neighbors about noise?
No, because there's like signs up there that says on the weekdays you can play after 6, so that's like the noise time. And then on Saturdays it's after 4, on Sundays it's after 1. It's pretty much like assumed that like there's going to be a lot of loud noises after 6 p.m.
We head inside, and Corey rattles off the bands he's been in that have used the old hotel as a practice space.
I've probably been in about 4 bands that have used a different room of this. Like, this current one is the longest, like, studio that I've rented from Yogi. Like, I was in a band called Christ Moon, and we were on this level. Headlock, we were upstairs?
Headlock, we were upstairs.
Oh, yeah, Headlock, we were in both. And then I was in another reggae band that was in some corner unit.
Is this Halloween
here? Yeah, it should be. This is the Spag Shack.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Big time.
Is there a reason why it's called that?
Spaghetti Ed. Ed Spaghetti. He's the owner of this one.
We go see Skullboy in the Spag Shack. And for the record, it's Shack with a Q. Their pedal amps are on an upside-down skateboard. It's a whole vibe. And it's loud.
This song's called Psycho Bloom.
There's art doodled all over the walls, and someone has written the chord progression for a song in lipstick on a mirror. Around 10 soundproofing foam panels are hanging on a strip on one of the walls, like someone started to put it up and then forgot about it. Rent for the Spag Shack is a bit of a sticky subject, but bandmates Kevin and Reef Weaver eventually answer. How much do you pay in rent?
I'm not at liberty to say that one.
Can we not talk about that?
We pay like $30 a month, but then like renting at West One, even for one day,
which is another studio. That's like
$25 an hour.
That's $60 for like 2 hours. So
It has a system where he actually splits the cost between everyone who's using the studio.
Yeah.
So based on the, based on the amount of community in the space, the cost gets divided. So we're averaging about, I think, 30, 25 or 30.
It turns out Skolbo used to practice at another space in Chinatown that Kevin ran.
Yeah, I used to run this practice studio called Fat Cat down the street on Mount Ikea, PH. And that was a lot of fun. The big Chinese restaurant with the big red arches was right below us, and that was cool. I think it was tough, though, because, like, I don't know, it's so much work running these studios. Like, I really do. You have to get keys for everyone all the time. And, you know, musicians are, like, not the most easy people to work with. So a lot of times, like, you're getting late on pay or they're just not paying at all. And also, we got a lot of noise complaints.
The lack of noise complaints is certainly one draw of the old hotel. But Kevin mentions another upside to practicing in the same building as many local bands, a sense of community. When you're all hanging out in the same spaces, people can drift from one group to another, and musicians can shrug band names on and off like cardigans. There's a fluid sense of community that comes naturally at the old Blaisdell. Kevin really appreciates that.
I think like a lot of community really comes together in these rooms, and you end up like a lot of bands end up forming just because, you know, people practice in here and you see a bunch of bands as you come and go. One of my favorite things to do in this building is go out to that like center area where all the staircases are. And you can literally hear like three or four bands all going at once. So it's like this terrible cacophony of noise because like everyone's doing their own thing. But that's kind of what makes it cool, is like everyone gets to do their own thing in here.
We walk outside and Corey points to the spot Kevin's talking about as we walk up a metal staircase that's only a little rickety.
Like Kev was saying, yeah, like if you stand like right here at one, a perfect night, you can hear that room, Scarlet Proof, that room up there where we're about to go. Now the left, they just put this up. It's brand new. I don't know if we should be walking on it. I'm kidding. Could you imagine?
Upstairs in Yogi's practice space, I want to know if these musicians feel like there are two Chinatowns, the one during the day and the one at night. Nikki Nakamura performs under the name Yolo Ono, and she has a hot take.
I think that's what makes our music scene so cool and spicy. Like, it's the inspiration, but also, TBH, I feel like those scenes don't really interact as much as I want them to. Like, I want to see more, like, aunties in the pit and shit like that. But I think, really, the AM to PM hours, there is kind of a divide, like, the aunties go home and go to sleep, and then we come out and do our shit. So there isn't really a lot of crossover, which is kind of cool because it means we can both exist in these like two very different worlds and share the space.
Tyler Rea pipes up. He plays bass in Jackie Chan the Band and another one called Lesbian Dads.
So I have like a really good like story for that like mixing. So we used to practice down the street over that way at the Yeet. Yeah, the old Fat Cat is what we'd call it. It was at the Yeehaw building with this Chinese restaurant at the bottom. And then up above, we had a studio over there. And like, we lost our bathroom key. So we couldn't use the bathroom. So I would go downstairs and try to use the bathroom in the Chinese restaurant, Yeehaw. But they wouldn't let me use the restaurant unless I bought something. So I would get like sesame balls every time I had to use the bathroom. And it was just like weird because they're like, who's this weird like band guy just like coming into their restaurant and buying a sesame ball and then asking to use the bathroom like every time after. But they're really good.
None of the guys seemed particularly concerned about their safety walking around the neighborhood at night. But when I ask Nikki how she feels, she pulls out a bright pink taser.
You can get this on the record.
Yes,
I carry this with me now as a woman.
That's
like, and it's also a flashlight. Flashlight, taser. But for the most part, you know, I do feel safe with it. Like, even the people who are, like, you know, living on the streets, like, I talk to all of them. Like, those are my homies. I'm like, okay, Uncle by J.J. Dolan's, how you doing tonight? Pablo, you know, like, what's up, dude? Like, what's up? Let's jam. You know, like, I know I have a relationship with the people who are in the area of Chinatown that I frequent. who live on the streets, who maybe conventionally people would feel unsafe around, you know?
The feeling I get from these musicians is that they're grateful to have found a spot like the old Blaisdell. Sure, it's poorly ventilated, the acoustics are basically non-existent, and the rooms reek of body odor and beer, but it's their space. Corey tells me as much.
I went to high school on the east side. Yogi went, you went Mililani, yeah? And I moved to, I live right up on Nuuanu. So like I moved to Chinatown in March 2022. And then like 2 months later, I was playing in a band in this building. And then like 2 months after that, we were playing shows in Chinatown up and down. And I mean, there's like maybe four regular spots for bands like ours, Jackie Chan, the band, Skullboy, Jalousies, it's Yogi's band. And I, to bring it all back to what we were talking about, like this space just makes it so much more easier for, it's Chinatown. You practice on the same night you play. You can, you know, practice a night ahead. You don't got to fight for a space at like a West One studio, which is a nice studio, just way priced out. And like they keep raising prices because that they have to raise their prices for rent and everything.
I ask the musicians where they would go without this space. It's not totally a thought experiment. There was a bill a couple of legislative sessions ago that would have allocated funds to the state to turn the block into affordable housing. The bill died in conference committee, but the threat of redevelopment looms large in the minds of these musicians. Here's Corey, Tyler Yogi, Tyler Rea, and Nikki.
If someone snapped their fingers, Old Blaisdell Hotel went away, where would everybody practice and play shows at next on the island?
Can I answer unseriously first?
Okay.
Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah!
Seriously, where would we go? I guess like the hippie in me would like want to just like hit the streets and like, you know, like find our own places to play, like play in open spaces, like a cute park, like a picnic vibe.
Off the dome, I can probably think Makiki has some open space that I've looked at before.
Really?
Other than that, there's really nowhere else.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's the thing. We're in Hawaii, right? And so everyone's like a residential area. You can't jam in your garage, right?
Yeah.
With Lesbian Dads, we were actually getting a generator because this space has like hours that you can play music. Like during the day, people are doing their business and art. So we wanted to jam like during the day. So we would just get a generator and go up on Tantalus or go to Kapi'olani Park, but we would just go out and get the generator and have band practice, and people would like come by and think we're doing a show or something, but we were just like trying to practice.
Being in a band is, you know, an escape. People want to just have fun and people just want to make music. I feel like in the end, it's important, obviously, because I'm part of it, but at the same time, like, yeah, where are we going to go? And they're just going to keep moving us around. I'm like, how much, what kind of dance can we play if they're just going to keep popping up condos that no one can afford unless they're moving here, you know, pushing other people out and literally pushing out just a bunch of people who aren't hurting anybody. I mean, we're loud, but other than that, it's like, okay, are we, you know.
Nah, you ever been to those hardcore pits? They're hurting people.
Yeah.
Reporting from the Spaghetti Shack, Maddie Bender, HPR News.
Well, we have to go now, but before we do, we'd like to thank the Shade Institute for hosting us here at the historic Liberty Bank building this morning. Tomorrow, we plan to talk about healthcare, and we'll be poking around in a lava tube. Any thoughts about the future of Chinatown on the cusp of change or more of the same? Leave your feedback on our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. The conversation is available as a podcast on Spotify, Apple, or on our website. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.